Hello, I'm Rachel Lau. This is number 0250, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0250. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Claude Genet, who talks about permaculture and protecting the environment.
One of my really big influences was a book called Natural Capitalism by Paul Hawking. It sort of makes the argument, if our economy, if it was a business, the way we're running it, we're doing a liquidation bankruptcy sale. Because the true capital is, for example, the forests, the lakes, the oceans. What comes out of them, lumber, fish, products, is the income. No business can survive by liquidating capital.
Corporate comedian Dave Fleming and author of Inside the Cubicle on how impending brides in the office can cut into productivity.
It starts out with the invite list. The people are jockeying for position here. It's like a celebrity wedding sometimes. Am I going to get the invite or not? And people are whispering over their cubicles, and that's just not good for morale in the office. But it's happening. It's probably happening in an office today somewhere.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. It's Fleet Week in New York. Be nice to the military.
We're having Fleet Week, and so you get the Navy ships come in here, and what the city is saying to people, that if you see a sailor, male or female, on the street, why don't you suggest that you take a selfie with them? I think it's a wonderful way to open up conversations, because generally most of us are shy. You don't just walk up to somebody and say, hi, big boy, what are you doing tonight? You know, you want to have some kind of way to introduction. So here's a case where if you want to pick up a sailor, male or female, just go over and say, hey, you want to take a selfie?
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0250, was Rachel Lau, who is a reporter at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And thank you very much, Rachel, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A zoo in the Philippines has started offering visitors the chance to receive a relaxing 15-minute massage from four Burmese pythons that are currently there in captivity. The Cebu City Zoo's pythons, who are named Michelle, Walter, EJ, and Daniel, are supposedly fed 10 or more chickens before giving out the massages so they won't be tempted to, you know, snack on the guests. During the therapeutic and calming massages, zookeepers keep watch as the snakes slither back and forth across a bamboo bed. Once the snakes are put on, it's virtually impossible to escape because they weigh about 550 pounds combined. Said volunteer Ian McLean, I had to lie on my back on a bamboo day bed in the open air. I was briefed on what to do and what not to do during the massage. These instructions are crucial, as you can imagine. They tell you not to blow air on the snake because this is like being pinched on the bum, apparently. You can't shout for help as a snake can feel your vibrations and think you're a prey or a predator, depending on the environment. Yeah. Okay, so exactly how is this 15-minute massage supposed to be relaxing? And I want to meet the person who figured this massage process out. I mean, there must have been a trial and error period. I really need to know more about the errors in this case. Anyway, in 2009, Richard Humphrey pleaded guilty to pirating movies, a federal crime, and he was sentenced to 29 months in prison. In 2010, he pleaded guilty to an unrelated state charge and landed in a Grafton, Ohio prison on a parole violation. There, the guard showed him and other inmates pirated movies, Humphrey says. Some even seem to have been recorded in movie theaters. You could see people walking in front of the camera, Humphrey said. A spokeswoman for the warden said the matter was being investigated, but Humphrey has doubts. How do you expect someone to be rehabilitated when there's authority figures that are running those institutions and that they have copyright infringement cases right before their very eyes? Yeah, prison, where inmates get to learn new criminal skills and hone up on the ones they already have. Well, an Oregon man who had been burned with hot oil ran into a 7-Eleven in Grants Pass, Oregon, and used some Hawaiian Punch Slurpees to treat his burns and cool himself off. The man entered the store while being chased by two other people, one of them possibly armed with a bat. Store clerk Charlie Bentley kept the individuals who were chasing the man out of the store so he could fill his shirt with Slurpee goodness without being disturbed. The man soothed his skin with the icy beverage before he was taken to a Medford Medical Center. An investigation revealed that the chase likely began during a dispute between two neighbors that ended up with two people being burned with hot oil. The other burn victim, a woman, did not require medical treatment. My, using a Slurpee to help burn wounds. Now that's a MacGyver kind of thing to do. Let's see if it gets the Slurpee folks to turn this into a commercial of some kind. Yeah, because it's not like I want to drink the stuff. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a U.S. Airways flight from Los Angeles to Philadelphia was forced to make an emergency landing in Kansas City after a service dog started doing its business in the aisle and the flight crew was unable to contain the mess. The passengers aboard U.S. Airways Flight 598 could only sit back and watch while a big dog defecated in the aisle not once, but twice. After the dog went to the bathroom the first time, about an hour into the flight, the crew did their best to deal with the mess, but they were unable to contain the smell. An hour later, it still smelled bad, and after they cleaned it up, it pooped again, said passenger Steve McCall. He told this to Inside Edition. A couple of people started dry heaving. A couple of people were throwing up. The flight was initially delayed for 2 hours because of a fuel spill on the tarmac, so apparently there's spillage everywhere in this story. So it's quite possible that this was what caused the dog to get a little bit backed up. The dog's owner did apologize. She said, "Hey, so sorry. I have to get all your addresses so I can give you a Starbucks gift card." Yeah, Starbucks gift cards, huh? Haven't these people been tortured enough? Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Claude Genet has been a successful actor and television host, and he's also a man who is passionate about the environment and the way we live and treat the earth. He was the deputy leader of Canada's Green Party from 2006 through 2009 and developed a model farm and founded a permaculture institute where he now lives in the neighboring state of Vermont. And Claude joins us on the line right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from Vermont. Hi, Claude.
Hi. Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure indeed.
First of all, in the introduction, I mentioned Permaculture Institute. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, that's one of those words that's kind of hard to define. It was invented by a couple of Australians. Permaculture is a contraction of the words permanent and agriculture. So the idea being essentially a permanent culture that is based on a sustainable source of food. No civilization can survive without a sustainable source of food and land use ethic, and we have neither. So it's a system of designing from the homeowner scale right up to the city scale, sustainable system, sustainable human habitat. And the real beauty and genius of it is connecting elements within a system so that elements are supported and provide multiple functions. So it ends up being quite a quite an interesting way to live. On my own little half-acre property here in Vermont, I have an astounding amount of things growing, much of them sort of permanent, i.e. the fruit trees, or for example, this morning I had a wonderful asparagus omelet. You know, the asparagus bed, you put it in 1 year and it'll feed you for the next 20 years. It's one of the first things that comes up in the spring. And, you know, I can talk and talk and talk about these things, but I found that the biggest sales point is when I have people over, you snap an asparagus off the ground and you go, take a bite out of that. And they go, wait, don't you got to cook it first? I go, take a bite. And then they're usually sold right then and there.
Now, have you always been passionate about the environment, or is this something that came to you with your travels?
Interesting question. As you said, I was born in Hollywood, California, son of an actor. And I grew up in Montreal with an acting career. And I always joke about the fact that when I came into my knowledge about the environmental situation, I had literally no context or background to understand what was going on. So when I learned about it, it had triple the effect on me that it might have had somebody else who grew up with some knowledge about it. Hit me like a ton of bricks. So no, I was an actor doing my thing. And yes, to answer your question more specifically, I recall very much being traveling in these places. I was hosting a show called Travel Travel out of Montreal for CTV, CFCF, and visiting, you know, these five-star resorts in these places. And I would, you know, talk with the employees and such working there. And they would tell me about how, you know, here's the gringos taking two, three showers a day and running the air conditioning all day, but the water's coming out of an aquifer, and in the village, people don't have any water. So I began to wonder, geez, how can this go on? How long can you draw down water from an aquifer in such a blithe manner without it eventually catching up to you? So that traveling, yes, was a part of my awakening, big time.
Is part of the message being lost in the way it's communicated? And by that, I mean, we talk about terms like saving the Earth. Now, the Earth is one of many planets that really have no problem in existing. It's we existing on it. That the Earth is going to be here whether we're here or not. And maybe we should be a little more selfish in the message and say, we've got to save ourselves. And by doing that, we perpetuate life on this planet.
I think you're really onto an important point there, Peter, that the messaging has suffered and is suffering. I myself have grown weary of a lot of the doom and gloom and the should and we must and we ought to and all those sort of imperative finger wagging, finger pointing kinds of argumentation. My way of looking at it from the word go has always been, to quote Ray Anderson, the former CEO of Interface Carpets, who was an astounding example of how doing things sustainably could lead to a bigger bottom line. He said, here's a better way to make a bigger buck. And, you know, ironically, one of the shining examples of how that's true is Walmart. I mean, I'm not a fan of Walmart, but good God, have they found ways to make sustainability pay. By way of example, by simply adding in natural lighting in their stores, they reduced their lighting costs by, I think it was 20%, but more importantly, the natural lighting increased sales in stores by 14%. Then they had such clout that they were able to say, listen, we want to get more product on the shelves and have less trucking costs. So all you manufacturers of liquid detergents and soaps and things that contained a high water percentage, you're going to eliminate some of that water and provide us with a concentrated version of your product. Shipping costs go down, more product on the shelves, less CO2 emissions, bottom line profits all the way around. And one of my really big influences was a book called Natural Capitalism by Paul Hawking. And it sort of makes the argument that, you know, if our economy, we're running it like, if it was a business, the way we're running it, we'd be doing we're doing a liquidation bankruptcy sale. Because the true capital is, for example, the forests, the lakes, the oceans. What comes out of them, lumber, fish, products, is the income. No business can survive by liquidating capital. So there's a whole other manner of speaking about these subjects that, astoundingly, I don't hear spoken about very often. My own personal experience, having run in six elections and trying to get that kind of messaging across, was ironically, it seemed to piss off and turn off a lot of the sort of lefty, greeny type of people for whom the word capitalism is such a loaded word and so misunderstood that the mere mention of it was enough to sort of eliminate the possibility of being heard any further. So my best efforts at messaging it in this way didn't go, but I think that's a really intelligent way to message it, that far from being a burden or a sacrifice, it ultimately ends up being a profitable benefit.
Well, you talk about the economy, and here in the so-called Western world, we've gotten used to the way we've lived through our economy with the use of oil and the products that we consume. And even if we get the message and we're changing to a certain degree, in a little way, what we do, the problem is two very large emerging parts of the world are now beginning to enjoy what we've enjoyed for several years, China and India, as they become more industrialized. So is it sort of like trying to bail water out of a boat with a spoon, because China and India are coming online as we try to become more environmentally friendly?
Again, and I think there's two ways of conceiving that absolute unarguable reality. One is, oh my God, the world's growing at an exponential rate, and the problems that accrue from that exponential growth are inevitable. The hell with it, nothing we can do. Or my God, the world is growing at an exponential rate. All the more reason to begin considering ways to make it last. Because, you know, there's a whole lot of perhaps confusion and discussion about what the word sustainable means. But I don't think there's a lick of discussion or confusion about what the word unsustainable means. And what it means is it can't be sustained. So there's a predictable outcome to all this. So it's not like it's a theoretical conversation about if. It's merely a discussion about potentially when. But it's a clear path with a clear ending. And it's, again, ironic that China is leading the way in a lot of ways with for example, the availability of solar panels and more sustainable cities. But I don't want that to sound pie in the sky and somehow deny the fact that there's a whole lot of people on the planet. And I heard a very interesting lecture from a fellow, I can't think of his name offhand, who makes the claim that perhaps the human race's greatest failing is our inability to understand the exponential function, i.e. the rate at which things are going. And as you point out, at the same time as the population is rising exponentially and the demands are rising exponentially, we tend to forget that the availability of resources is diminishing exponentially, and the ability of the planet to absorb the wastes of those manufacturing processes, et cetera, pollution, if you will, is also diminishing exponentially. And to me, recognition of the rapidity with which those exponential lines are diverging, one going up, one going down, would seem to me cause for people to be running around grabbing their hair, screaming in absolute horror. And I'm astounded to see that instead of that, there's a sort of denial, a sort of I don't know. Ignorance is bliss. I don't know how to respond to that in a way that would be encouraging to people. There certainly is a problem, and to me, it's a reason to act.
Well, as far as the population is concerned, using an analogy from the economy, it seems to be we're living beyond our means, and we have just about a minute. So I know it's a tough question to ask in a minute, but what, as individuals, can we do?
That's one of my least favorite questions of all time, because I was on Facebook before you called, and you know, it's every day we see these top 10 lists. So everybody wants to hear top 10 things that I can do at home personally. We began the conversation with a discussion about permaculture and growing our own food. It, as strange as it might seem, it might be perhaps the greatest act of sedition, political sedition there is. When we understand all the implications of the global food industry and all the benefits that accrue from starting to do things in your own backyard, the results are massive. That said, I honestly believe that our individual actions are pretty minimal in the face of things, and that we don't need cosmetic changes, we need systemic changes that can only come from massive political action. And I know people say it left all the time, we hear it, voting makes no difference whatsoever. But the current polls in Canada are that the Conservative Party are leading in the polls. So the result of believing that voting makes no difference and therefore not voting results in a tremendous difference in that the most environmentally damaging party will get reelected by virtue of our apathy, which is why I ran personally in 6 different elections trying to get this message across, knowing full well I was going to lose and paying for my campaign with my own money, trying to get some political will and movement. I don't think there's another way, personally.
Claude, thank you very much for being on the program with us. People can find out more information by going to your website at claudejeannet.com. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Peter. Have a wonderful day.
Claude Jeannet. Again, you can check out his website at claudejeannet.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0250, and you'll find the links to Claude's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about office politics and weddings with the author of Inside the Cubicle. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And we do indeed have, of course, an idiot of the day coming your way, plus much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, 42-year-old Felicia A. Smith seems to really know how to give a birthday lap dance. According to witnesses, she sat the object of her desire down, did a full contact lap dance, including rubbing her hands all over his body, and at the end, she got onto her knees and pushed her head between his legs to tell him, "I love you, baby. Happy birthday." But the 4-minute performance may cost Smith her job. She's a teacher at Stouffville Middle School in Houston, Texas, and the baby that she loves is one of her students. She did the dance in her classroom at the urging of the boys' classmates, who watched the whole thing and, of course, captured it on video. Smith has been charged with having an improper relationship with a student, a felony, and was released on $30,000 bail. The teacher was removed from the campus during the investigation, the school district said, and has not returned. Okay, I know what you're all thinking. Yeah, where's that video? Also, where were these teachers when we were in school? And perhaps, what the hell was she thinking, acquiescing to the whims of horny teenage boys? Seriously. Yeah. Anyway, a Vancouver, Washington third grade teacher, speaking of teachers, rewards her students with pretend money when they finish schoolwork. Then she charges them for treats like popcorn and bathroom breaks, which cost $50. I didn't know a bathroom break was a treat, but there you go. The teacher refused to waive the fee for a student who had only $50 and wanted to buy popcorn, so the student didn't go to the bathroom and eventually wet her clothes.
When the child has to pay money to use a bathroom, that's wrong, said the student's mother. It's inhumane. That's a health issue. The school gave the girl a pair of boys' shorts to wear, and she was teased for both that and her accident. The district said it would investigate. Okay, first of all, when I was in grade school, there were no treats. But that's beside the point. Now, while I might be inclined to slightly agree with the student's mother, let's not forget the fact that the student in question did have a choice. Popcorn or bathroom? Clearly, she made the wrong choice. And in the grand scheme of things, isn't that a lesson learned? Class dismissed. Seminole County, Florida Sheriff's Deputy Joseph Fetchick's wife found a large set of text messages on his iPad. The device was linked to Fetchick's phone and so contained all of the over 7,000 explicit text messages he had exchanged with Sergeant Valencia LaRue. Oh, what a name. Sergeant Valencia LaRue. Anyway, the messages allegedly included coordination for various liaisons while one or both of the officers were on duty. Both officers were investigated and found guilty of abandoning their posts, conduct unbecoming of an officer, and violating department ethics. Fetchick was fired and LaRue had already resigned. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is deciding whether to strip both officers of their certifications, which would prevent them from again becoming law enforcement officers in the state. Okay, you always knew that unlimited data plans would come back to bite you, didn't you? Yeah, well, now it has. Anyway, in April, India's New Delhi High Court judges declined to halt the local government's program of posting pictures of deities on the walls of buildings in order to discourage public urination. You know, that surely no one would want to soil his lord. The plaintiffs pointed out that the campaign was so clearly ineffective that perhaps the deity's images were even making the problem worse. That evidence so far shows that confronting the images might even compel some people to relieve the pressure on the bladder. Yeah. Oh, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Very weird. Anyway, time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News. Before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Portland, Oregon were dispatched to check on a man running in traffic at 7 a.m. The man would be easy to spot. He was dressed in chainmail and a helmet and carrying a sword, a staff, and a shield, and had attacked a car. When officers arrived, they were told Conrad Bass, age 30, had walked up the hood of a BMW and repeatedly stabbed the car with his sword, causing $4,000 in damage. Bass explained to officers that he was a high elf engaged in battle with the evil Morgoth and was also tripping on LSD. Ah, so he really was a high elf. Okay. Let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? While your coworker's wedding appears on the surface to be a happy occasion, it can actually be a huge drag on morale at the office. Dave Fleming knows a thing or two about cubicle life. He is a corporate comedian and marketing expert and the author of Inside the Cubicle. And Dave joins us on the line right now from Dallas. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I've never given much thought to how somebody's wedding would affect the office environment, but I guess it would.
It really does. It appears on the surface to be such a happy time, but the challenges that are left in the wake of that wedding for all of the bride or groom's coworkers is quite significant and quite challenging, as a matter of fact.
And I would assume it doesn't make a difference whether the bride is easygoing or is a bridezilla, or does it make a difference?
I think it's her level of involvement that really gets after it, and it starts out with the invite list. I mean, the people are jockeying for position here. It's like a celebrity wedding sometimes. Am I going to get the invite or not? And people are whispering over their cubicles, and that's just not good for morale in the office. But it's happening. It's probably happening in an office today somewhere.
So what are the things coworkers, actually, let me rephrase that. What are the things brides or brides-to-be should concern themselves with when it comes to the office? Should they take this into consideration, or is this something that is organic and out of their hands?
Well, they can't stop the forced chip-ins for the coworkers who don't even really know the bride and are asked to give $20 for a stroller they never lays eyes on. That's just sort of part of the game. But they can certainly be cognizant of the fact that someone's going to have to do their work while they're on this beautiful, relaxing beach on their honeymoon, and they should definitely be aware of the aforementioned invite challenge. And if it's just going to be a few people, let's not run around handing out invitations like we're a fifth grader inviting someone to our birthday party.
Okay, well, the idea that the bride has to go off on her honeymoon, that's kind of understandable. And I'm assuming in most cases she's taking whatever accrued vacation time she has coming her way. But what about, some of those disruptions during the course of, I guess, either before or after the wedding? Are there disruptions after the wedding as well, like when the bride comes back?
Absolutely. I mean, when the bride returns glowing, happy, this is probably someone that was a very productive member of the team, and she is really not focused on work. So, like you said, the vacation is certainly understandable, but it's the week or two after that when we're still digging through wedding pictures and writing our thank you notes at the desk, and everyone around her is still having to pick up the slack for the amount of work that's being asked to be done. That can create a problem for the coworkers. So the bride should definitely be cognizant of that as well and say, okay, this is probably not a good place to be sitting here in my cubicle writing thank you notes while my team is working on a critical project.
So again, while the bride should not be doing that, realistically, in your experience, how long before and after the wedding is a bride in a somewhat of a work fog?
I would say, a week or two. It depends literally on that individual, but it's just, it's a great time, and you should enjoy it as a bride, but you just have to be aware that your happy moment is not a happy moment for everybody else. Yes, they're happy for you, but someone who's having to stay till 7 or 8 o'clock or is missing Tommy's recital because a project's due the next day and they're having to do two times the work. So it's what I've seen is usually, 2 weeks, but the less you do on that, the better.
Now, what can hurt, not necessarily morale, but office relationships more? Two scenarios here. The person who doesn't get invited to the wedding and you have to work with them later on, or the person who got invited but declined to attend.
No, that's an interesting question. I think it's going to be the first, even though someone turning somebody down may have a problem working with the bride in the future. I'm not sure what the issue was there, but I think it's that person that's jonesing to be invited and probably making it well known that, hey, look at me. I deserve to be invited. I'm, one of your work buddies, or I'm going to be so much fun at the wedding. And they're going to be asking, they're going to be pestering, they're going to be asking coworkers, they're going to be pulling them aside in the hallway. Hey, did you get invited? Did you get invited? There's going to be whispering, and it's going to be a hunt for that invitation that is never going to come. And that is just, it's going to distract everybody and really take away from the productivity. So even though turning it down is an interesting choice, going on a full all assault to get it is definitely a bigger problem.
I'm going to be, I guess, somewhat sexist here and think that this is only really a woman's issue. I mean, do guys really care about whether they get invited or not? And conversely, do grooms get overworked about upcoming nuptials of their own?
Certainly, the getting invited is something that I've seen more often with the female side of the office, absolutely. I think the guys' issues usually come when they are, and I'll use the term, forced to attend a shower that is just not their favorite thing to do. But grooms typically are not involved in those details, and they're maybe given two or four invitations to their work friends as they looked at the dance card, and primarily, and again, there are exceptions, this is typically a
female issue that I have seen personally.
Changing the topic a little bit, because I did mention earlier that you're a comedian and marketing expert, and a corporate comedian and marketing expert, and you're the author of Inside the Cubicle. And people can go to your website, which is DaveFlemingSpeaks.com. On your website, there's a little clip where you're doing, I guess, corporate stand-up, and you're talking about something that made me laugh out loud because I'm just as guilty as everyone else, opening an attachment before I send it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite observations that I put in any presentation to corporate people because they get it. So basically, you're sitting there, you're working on a really important Word document or PowerPoint, and you've got the email, and even writing the email might be something as simple as, Jim, here's the project you asked for, or do I do? Here's the project you asked for, Jim. So you're all worried about that. And then you clip the paperclip, you attach the document. The next button everyone should hit is send. Nobody hits send. Everybody opens that attachment to see, did my Word document magically change? Something might have happened between when I closed it and attached it, and we all do it, and then we look through it. And then if you make a change, it's some weird file that you can't even find anymore, and it's just a disaster, and I call all of that attachment paranoia.
Why do we have attachment paranoia?
We're so worried about making a mistake at work, and we shouldn't. I mean, you did a great job. You know this topic way better than the person you're sending it to, most likely, and yet you were so worried. Is one little letter out of place, or did I overlap a picture? Oh, no. What if I did that on a PowerPoint slide? So we want to check it again, or what if magically this document wasn't the one that I named exactly what it is that I named? We're paranoid, and unfortunately, sometimes it creates crazy work like I just described.
The stuff you do is certainly entertaining. It's funny. It's also very useful. And as we are approaching June, as we are into June with so many brides, I hope what you had to say about brides will sink in for the brides-to-be. People can find out more information by going to your website, as I mentioned earlier, which is DaveFlemingSpeaks.com. And they can also check out your book, Inside the Cubicle, correct?
Absolutely. And my big thing is, we can all be so productive at work if we just stop for a minute, stop taking ourselves so seriously, laugh about crazy things that people eat in the break room, or laugh when you open an attachment like we just described. Laugh at yourself, and I guarantee you will have a better work day and a better work life.
Dave, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. I appreciate it.
Dave Fleming, author of Inside the Cubicle. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0250, and you'll find the links to Dave's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A few years ago, a janitor at an elementary school in Kansas was found sunbathing in the nude on the school's roof. Instead of firing him, the school board suspended him without pay for 30 days and demoted him from his position as head custodian. Later, he applied for the head custodian position at 7 different schools. After being rejected for all of them, he sued the school district in federal court. When his case was dismissed, he appealed all the way to the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he lost again. Let's be fair. This man was found nude on the roof of an elementary school and was allowed to keep his job with the school? How does that happen? In the end, despite the school district's efforts to avoid firing this guy, it was sued anyway. If you ask me, our schools and our country would be a lot better off if we all did a little janitorial work and cleaned up a legal system that wastes taxpayer dollars on lawsuits like this. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And in the streets of New York, yes indeed it is, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the beautiful, almost about to rain, streets of New York, maybe, or not.
Yes, spring and by extension summer seem to be coming a little slowly this year, a little more slower.
What do you mean?
Well, it just seems we had a long winter and the spring hasn't really sprung per se. Are you having a lot of rain?
No, we're not having a lot of rain. Okay. Are you trying to confuse me? Because Peter, you are confusing me.
No, it's a whole global warming question. That's all.
Oh, okay. But I didn't know whether you were segueing into some story or not, and this proves once again to all your nice listeners that we do a live talk.
Okay, so let's get right to the stories. And one of the big buildings, one of the landmarks in your city, is Madison Square Gardens, and I understand it hasn't paid any taxes for pretty much three decades.
Yeah, why? Do you pay taxes?
I always pay my taxes on time every year.
Yeah, you must be one of the little people, as Leona Helmsley would have once said. No, it's an amazing fact that came out this week. I mean, I guess we all should have known about it for the last 32 years, but somehow it came out this week. And by the way, Madison Square Garden is not square. It happens to be round. It's called Madison Square Garden because it used to be at a place called Madison Square. And when they moved it over, they kept the name. So it's also a little bit illogical. But in any event, they don't pay taxes and haven't paid taxes. They get abatements, abatements, and abatements. So the question is, what's going on? My own personal theory is there must be a lot of politicians and civic leaders in New York City who've been getting a lot of free tickets on the side, if you catch my drift. Otherwise, I can't understand how come Madison Square Garden, that makes more money than it knows what to do with, literally, doesn't pay taxes.
Meanwhile, there was a story that we had on the Stuff File program last week, but I'm dying to get your take on it, and that's the story of the guy in New York City who stole a bakery truck. What have you been hearing about this story?
Well, it's an interesting story because it's just so weird that if anybody hears me telling the story, they're going to say, oh, Peter must be making it up. But I'm not. A guy went to a bakery store place, and he took one of the trucks that was all loaded and ready to go out on its route. And then he took off all his clothes. So now he's a naked guy driving a bakery truck, which has a so-called route to go, but he doesn't know the route. So instead of following the route, he just picks out his own route and goes from place to place delivering bread. Now, the amazing thing about it is that imagine, if you could, somebody ringing your doorbell, you open the doorbell, there's a guy standing there naked, probably kind of hairy and ugly. Would you take bread from him? And yet everybody he offered free bread to took it, and not one single person bothered to call the police. And the only way this all came to light was, of course, the bakery company knew that they were missing a truck, and eventually the police got the guy. I don't know what in the world you can do to punish him because, I don't know, I guess it's a crime, but I think it's going to be a movie coming to a theater near you one of these days.
That must be some really good bread.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of weird that everybody would. I mean, to me, that's a little bit of turnoff. Maybe it was a good-looking babe I might have taken the bread, but not from some naked guy.
Meanwhile, I understand a lot of places in New York City, a lot of, I guess, new buildings, or actually old buildings, are getting new toilets?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a funny thing about New York City. Most people don't realize it, but we have really an unlimited quantity of water here. We don't have droughts or water restrictions or anything like that. We really got wall-to-wall water, and it has nothing to do with the fact that we're sitting in the ocean. It comes from the Catskills and the Adirondacks, you know, all the reservoirs that surround us. But at the same time, most New Yorkers, including myself, are pretty good about the water. You figure just because you have it, you're not going to waste it. So what the city is going to do, and the city can do it because we have the money, is that it's going to start taking out old toilets, or as we would say in New York, a turlet, and replacing it with a new toilet, and will be better as far as water consumption and what have you. So it's an interesting thing. I don't know if it's ever been done in any other city. I don't know if any other city has ever had enough money to do it, but New York does, so it'll be interesting. You just trade in your toilets. So, of course, the question is, what are you going to do with the used toilets? I guess there'll be a market in used toilets, like used cars.
There'll be giant planters in people's front lawns, I think.
That's a good idea. I like it. You think big. That's what I like.
Okay. Now, one of the other things that I found rather interesting is, well, first of all, I know you have kids, although they're all adults now. But back in the day when your kids were actual kids, if you were to send them off to camp, would you pack for them yourself or get someone else to do it for you?
That whole story is ridiculous. Nothing in the, look, I grew up in a family in which my mother got up in the morning and she made us lunches. And even today, I don't go out to work unless my wife makes me lunch. I brown bag it all the time. I think these people that spend that kind of money, I don't care how rich they are, stupid. And here now is a case where these people are sending these kids off to summer camp, which is a big thing in New York City, because after all, it is a little bit of a concrete jungle. You want the kids to commune with nature, so you send them off to camp for 6 or 7 weeks. But now they're calling in people who will pack a trunk for the parents so they don't have to bother to do it. I mean, it's bad enough not to make a kid lunch on the way to school. Now you can't even pack their suitcase. And they get, by the way, $250 an hour for doing it. So if you find you need a suitcase packed, Peter, I'll get one of these people to stop in to see you.
$250 an hour?
That's right.
Wow. Are they being packed by the Medellin cartel?
Well, it's being a specialist. They must be a PhD in packing a suitcase.
Okay. Now, Fleet Week has taken place in New York City, and I understand it's an interesting way. Modern technology has lined up with Fleet Week. You can get military selfies.
Well, I think it's a lovely idea because, you know, I have a military background. Our kids have military background. We're having Fleet Week, and so you get the Navy ships come in here, and what the city is saying to people, that if you see a sailor, male or female, on the street, why don't you suggest that you take a selfie with them? Now, for those who don't know what that means you just hold up your iPhone or your Android or what is it, and, you know, take a picture of yourself and somebody else. And it's kind of nice. Also, I think it's a wonderful way to open up conversations because generally most of us are shy. You don't just walk up to somebody and say, hi, big boy, what are you doing tonight? You know, you want to have some kind of way to introduction. And usually that's a dog. Ooh, what a cute little dog. What's his name? So here's a case where if you want to pick up a sailor, male or female, just go over and say, hey, you want to take a selfie?
Now, I would assume that one of the things people will do, or certainly the guys coming and gals coming in for Fleet Week, one of the things they'll do is check out various sites. And one of the sites you got to check out, of course, is Coney Island. And I understand that's roaring back to life in a big way.
Yeah, well, it is. They've invested in new rides. A new kind of roller coaster, and the boardwalk is all fixed up and everything. And I really am a promoter of Coney Island because it's a wonderful place to go. And unfortunately, the people in Manhattan and the tourists that come here don't really know much about it and don't go out there. But if you're coming to New York City, you really should try and spend at least one day out at Coney Island with your baby bathing suit and with your towel and everything. So it's a nice place to go to. And just think, you can have a big lunch with frankfurters and hamburgers, then you can go on the roller coaster, and then you can throw up.
Has Coney Island changed a lot since the last time I was there, which was 1964?
In 1964, probably, I don't know, I don't remember offhand. It might have been pretty good then. And then it had a period of time where it kind of went down the tubes a little bit because everybody was running off to Europe, my friend. But now it's back the way it was when I was a kid, which I guess, yeah, must have been, maybe in the 1960s. So, yeah, it had a period in there, maybe the 80s, where it went down a little bit. But now it's coming back with a vengeance. A lot of upscale stores there. It's very nice.
And I understand that one of the best ways to see Coney Island, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is with a Gabby Cabby tour. Is that not correct?
Yeah, well, I decided to do that this year because it's a place that most tourists never go out to. And I'm telling people, I'm calling it my Coney Island beach tour, and I'm taking people out to Coney Island for the day. And since I was a lifeguard when I was in college, I hereby guarantee no one will drown on my watch.
And if they need your help, that's no extra charge?
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. And speaking of cabs, one last thing I want to talk about. Speaking of the cabs, what's this idea of putting black box data recorders in taxis?
You know, they never stop fooling around with us. I mean, the total scope of a cab ride is you hail a cab on the street, you get into the cab, tell them where you want to go, and give them $5 or $6 or whatever it is, and that's the end of it. So they come up with playing television in the cab, having credit cards in the cab, having GPS in the cab. Now they want to have the black box in the cab so they know where every cab driver went during the day. I can't imagine what you need all that information for. It's just another waste of time, which the owners have to pay to put into the cabs. You know, it's another silly gadget. And it ends up meaning that the fares are going to go up. You know, there's no communicating. Just get in the cab and go and get out.
And with the black box in the cab, will the cab company also, for instance, will your wife be able to have the information so she knows where you are at all times?
Well, I guess that's a possibility. I'm calling it the Malaysian air taxi. Oops, that's a bad joke.
Okay. And before we let you go, I understand there was a celebrity sighting. You saw a show at Jones Beach.
It was really wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. We went out and we saw Barry Gibb, and it was just awesome. And, of course, he has a wide variety of songs, and everybody was liking them and cheering them. And then he says, I'm now going to do a song that I think most of you have heard before. And, of course, they went into the Staying Alive from Saturday Night Fever, and the place just went absolutely nuts. It was just fantastic. The only thing that could have topped it is if John Travolta would have walked out on the stage, you know, in the middle of it, which if I were John Travolta, I would have done it. Anyway, that was at Jones Beach, which is another one of our beaches, but that's not exactly in New York City, and it's a little complicated to get there.
Hmm. Anyway, if people want to find out more information about all the things we've been talking about, they can go to your website, which is www.gabby.com, and it's also where they'll find information, more information, on taking that Coney Island tour, the Gabby Cabby Beach Tour. Peter, I thank you very, very much for being on the program this once again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I have one more Stuff File news story to get to before we get to our idiot of the day. A New Mexico cook is accused of serving tainted cheese sandwiches to state corrections employees on the sly. While working at the South Valley New Mexico Women's Recovery Academy in Albuquerque, Yolanda Aguiello allegedly licked pieces of cheese, put them on sandwiches, and served them to probation and parole officers. During one such occasion, she allegedly told an officer she'd make him or her a special grilled cheese sandwich before she actually licked the cheese. Yolanda reportedly said that she'd show them who was special and better than others. Another witness told investigators that the 59-year-old also once sucked on an ice cube and then put it into a cup and gave it to someone. She also would allegedly dump ice cubes on the floor and then serve them in pitchers of iced tea. Yolanda has been charged with 3 counts of battery on a peace officer. Oh, wait a minute. You mean she actually licked the cheese? You know, for a moment I thought that was just a euphemism. Yes. Anyway, time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Now this is what you call cheeky. A man accused of robbing a woman at a ferry terminal in Washington State was nabbed after trying to friend her on Facebook the next day. 28-year-old Riley Allen Mullins was charged with second-degree robbery. Police say the woman was listening to headphones when she was struck on the head from behind. The suspect grabbed her iPod and purse and took off. The woman described the suspect to police and said that he had a triangle tattoo on his neck. The following day, she called police to inform them the man who robbed her had just friended her on Facebook. She suspected Mullen had found her name from her ID. When she saw the picture, she immediately recognized him as the person who had assaulted her and robbed her, said police. Police confirmed the Facebook account was registered to Mullins and that his profile photo shows he has a triangle tattoo. Oh, man. I mean, why? Oh, why would someone want to friend on Facebook the person they just robbed? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0250. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0250. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.